Pat Weichel. I'm an architect evangelist with the Developer Platform Evangelism team. I have the privilege today to introduce you to Pat Helland. Pat?
Nice to be here with you, Pat. And I love TechEd and haven't been to a TechEd US in a number of years, and it's a thrill to be here, be back at Microsoft, and just looking forward to it.
It's thrilled to have you here.
And so I have we can start out with a little mini presentation, which
love
is
that.
Excerpt from a presentation that I have called The Irresistible Forces Meet the Movable Objects. And I picked out, I think it's something like 10 slides, to talk about how we're driving towards many core processors. And I'm going to be doing this talk here at TechEd at 1 o'clock today. I already gave it in Europe at the TechEd Barcelona, TechEd EMEA conference there last November. And so let's talk about many core processors. So I came back to Microsoft in March of 2007 and started asking around what was going on, and people were telling me about all this many-core stuff, and I did not know what the hell it was, and I had to ask a bunch of questions, and this talk is me distilling back what I learned by talking to the hardware people about it. And so it's pretty interesting. Moore's Law has been going for a long time, and Moore said the number of transistors is going to roughly double every 2 years to 18 months. But Moore's Law is about the number of transistors. And we crossed 1 billion transistors per chip in 2006. Now, what's interesting, though, is it used to be that the voltage at which we would run the chips was dropping dramatically. Now that drop has just is tapering off. You know, generation by generation, we are not getting the voltage to drop very fast as it moves forward. And also, the power consumption of a chip is crazy. It's hot enough to be able to, it's 150 watts, hot enough to cook a hot dog. I know I have touched a 100-watt light bulb, and that's a whole big light bulb, not a chip, and burned myself. And 150 watts coming out of a chip is crazy. It's super hot. It's the biggest problem in system design that we face right now is how to get that heat, the power into the chip, and the heat out of the chip. And the frequency to the CPUs, this is the really, really interesting thing. It used to be we would go down and we'd go to buy a computer and it would be twice the frequency as the last one we bought. That is tapering off. And you can see that in 2005, you know, sure, we had a little more than 3 gigahertz, but it's, you know, then it got to be 3.6 and now it's 3.8 and it's just flattening off. We are not getting faster frequencies out of the chips. And what the heck is that all about? Well, as I started asking my friends what was going on, I started hearing about what they call the power wall. So, you know, back in 1993, you had like 8-watt chips, right? They were really, really low. And now here we are in 2008, and we're seeing 150-watt chips. And that's continuing to drive higher and higher as we try to push the high end of a chip. What the hell is that about? Well, it turns out a major component of the total power is what's called static power, and the difference between the two is what's called dynamic power. Now, what are those things? How does that work that way? As transistors get smaller, they leak. So what does that mean? What does leak mean? It means the electrons are bouncing around inside the transistor, and every once in a while, an electron goes bink, and it pops out. Well, it makes kind of sense as the geometries of the transistors get smaller that more things will pop out. And so the leakage goes up as the features get smaller with Moore's Law. Now, faster frequencies, if I'm going to be going 3 gigahertz instead of 2 gigahertz, that means the bits are switching more quickly. Obviously, it does. And so the dynamic power is the energy it takes to flip the bits to actually drive the computation. And as we go faster, that consumes more dynamic energy. But as it consumes the energy, the chips get hotter. Well, guess what? As the chips get hotter, the electrons bounce around a little more, and more often they go bink and fly out, and so the static power goes up. But now we're in a bad cycle, because as the chips get hotter, more and more of that static power is sucked up, and the power budget is increasingly static power and not so much the dynamic power, which is what it takes to actually make the chip work. So the takeaway from this is no one that I've talked to thinks we're going to get very much more value in terms of the frequencies of the chips going up. Not with CMOS technology, not without some surprising change. We're going to see a tapering off in how fast the transistors can flip, and the frequencies, it'll eke up a little bit, you know, maybe 10% every year or so, a couple of more, you know, cycles every few years, but it's not going to be the big thing. And as we get those modest gains in frequency, we're going to have to start water cooling and all sorts of things to deal with preventing the chips from melting, and they will be very, very expensive. Another issue is the memory wall. The access time to DRAM remains basically flat. I was working designing a multiprocessor before coming to Microsoft, and that was in the early 90s. And at the time, access time to DRAM was about 60 nanoseconds, and it still seems to be kind of around 60 nanoseconds. Now, we get more bandwidth. We could get more bytes in and out, you know, in a particular period of time, but the time between saying, I want this particular cache line and getting it back coming in seems to be staying kind of in the neighborhood of 60 nanoseconds. Now, if your processor is faster and you're doing more stuff and your frequency is faster, then you're waiting longer, more cycles during that same 60 nanoseconds, more cycles are lost. So something that got started in the right around 1990 was a notion of speculative execution. So a processor is going down the program counter and it comes to a branch and it says, gee, I could go left or I could go right. But you don't yet know because you're still catching up whether you're going to go left or right. So there's a part of the processor which is guessing, oh, I'll need this memory if I go left, and I'll need that memory if I go right, and running out and asking for the memory to come back to increase the chance that you don't stall, to increase the chance that you don't get stuck. And that's a technology that we're, you know, 15, 20 years into, and it's pretty well established. But it takes about five times as many transistors as something which just mindlessly does the next thing and then asks for memory only when it does it. And that's called in-order execution. Simple one instruction at a time. And if the clock is running slow enough, the amount of stall that you have isn't such a big deal, right? So you have this trade-off between complex speculative execution and less complex in-order execution. So you can work hard to speculate to fight that memory wall, but it takes a lot of transistors and power, and that's worth it if you have a sequential execution and you want to push it farther ahead. We've really invested a lot in this technology, and it's very valuable. Now, I keep hearing about many-core. What's the gig with many-core? Well, if you look at the geometries of a transistor, and I actually was working in, you know, a very low-level job in chip manufacturing in the late 70s, and at the time, we were working on 6-micron technology. That means the dimensions of a transistor were 6 micron on each side. That's 6,000 nanometers. Now we are at, you know, roughly 45 nanometers instead of 6,000 nanometers. So that's how come we can have so many more transistors, because we've learned to make the geometry smaller. The trend seems to be every couple of years, we can make the geometries about 2/3 what they were before. So where we're at 45 nanometers now, there's stuff in plans for doing 32 nanometers. Now, if it's 2/3 the width in length, that's like the square area is 4/9, right? Because it's 2 × 2/3 × 3. That's roughly half the size. That means roughly twice as many transistors on a particular die size if we can shrink the geometries by 2/3 every couple of years. So what we're seeing is, because we don't know what to do with those transistors to make a faster processor, the chip manufacturers are putting more processors on the chip. And you can't even buy for your laptop a single core processor anymore. You're getting dual and quad core and 8-core. And this trend is continuing. And you have to trade off, are they, you know, speculative execution cores? Or are they in-order execution cores where you can have more of them, but each individual one isn't going to go quite as fast? There's an increasing tendency to put many, many, many of them. And it is quite conservative to say we will have 256 of them by 10 years from now. It's more likely we'll have 500 or 600 of them on a single chip by 10 years from now. The problem is software guys, us crazy architects, we haven't figured out how to make the software which is going to properly use all of these cores. So increasing attention to parallel chips, and many times that's with the in-order execution. Again, that means the single sequential execution of those is not going to be quite as fast. And we have to think about on-chip shared memory, because we can manage the shared memory on the chip far faster than going off to DRAM, but you have cache coherence issues. You have, what does it mean to actually share that memory without getting tangled up in your underwear, right? It's not such an easy thing to do. And of course, you still have a memory hierarchy. By the time you get into hundreds of processors, some are going to be closer than others. And so the access time to that shared memory is not going to be uniform. And we're seeing inexpensive, low-power parallel chips. So go back to that power curve. Think about how, as you push a little faster in the frequency, you use a lot more power. We're going to see hundreds of processors, but with the frequency throttled back and using a lot less power. That's going to be especially important in laptops and things that are battery driven. And I don't know about you, but I'd love to have a laptop that doesn't really make my lap burn as I run it, and that can have a much longer battery life, kind of similar to what we're seeing in cell phones and all of the rich media cell phones, where we're using lower power. But we will have, in aggregate, a lot of power as long as it's written to be parallel. So reinforcing this, sequential versus parallel. If I have a sequential thing and I want to make it do more, I'm going to spend lots more money to get that. And I'll only get a little more sequential processing for a lot more money. If, on the other hand, I have an app that can run in parallel, then I can have an amazing amount of computation for what will continue to drop in its cost as we move forward. It's getting a lot cheaper to get slower parallel processing. So we have to ask ourselves, are we going to be parallel or are we going to be parallelized, right? And just thinking about it, there's two broad categories of parallelism. There's pipeline parallelism. I'll do the first part of the computation and hand it off to the next core, which will do the next part of the computation and hand it off to the next core. Those are reasons why encryption is basically free, encryption, decryption. Parsing XML, basically free, because those things can be pipelined like complete craziness. It's not a problem, and we'll have the cores to do them. Another one is partitioned parallelism. You take the A's, I'll take the B's, you take the C's, and we spread the work out across different partitions. That one's a little bit harder for us to rationalize in existing applications. We have to think really hard about how to spread the work out to get the partitioned parallelism, but this needs to be more in our psyche as we design our applications. So again, single cores won't get faster. We have to spread the work across many processors. And most existing apps aren't parallel. And the places that I worry most about are for servers. It's the big databases, because for the stateless middle-tier stuff, we can tend to run that on different processes running on different cores. It's the database on the server that tends to be that fighting point where we're coming together on shared memory. And in clients, it's the big executables that we've classically written. They're going to need a lot of thinking as we move forward. And the whole area of how to leverage parallelism within the client is one that I'm keenly interested in, which is why I'm working in DevDiv on rich internet applications. Now, we can actually spin faster by holding close. So if you imagine an ice skater, as she has her arms out, and as she pulls them in, she spins faster, because holding it close, you can go and move faster. The same thing occurs in processors. If the data is in the cache on the chip, they go fast. Right now, almost all computation is memory bound, and that's the big problem we have. Waiting for DRAM is slow. Waiting for the network is ridiculously slow. Waiting when you're an offline, as you're trying to connect off to the server, that's obscenely, glacially, impossibly slow. But the thing to remember is it is okay to have copies of the data close by. If you want to pull read-only reference data and have a copy of it close to you, not a problem. if you can manage and think through the application behavior of actually making a change locally and having that coalesce with other changes remotely, that's a huge area of investigation and a huge area of excitement moving forward. And you can really think about keeping your opinion of what the data should be and then managing, coalescing that with other opinions. And that, again, is going to be a design area that I think is going to be a lot of fun for us architects. So the takeaways of this mini lecture are: processors are changing. Lots of processors, but the individual one is no faster now. And power and heat are huge issues. If we could do a data center talk and talk about all of the challenges in the data center associated with managing power. They are the big issue of the day. And that's related to carbon footprint, but it's also related to how can I actually physically manage power to a data center and air conditioning out. And these power issues are a consequence of physics and of CMOS technology, and we're not going to just wish them away. We as software architects need to focus on parallelism, because sequential processing will not get much faster. Parallel processing will continue to offer more even on a single chip. We need to focus on data locality. Processors stall while they wait for memory, but it's okay to actually have copies of the data close by into the core within the chip and close by into the machine within a network. And reading copies can frequently give you excellent results, even if it is not the locked truth. And managing how to deal with it not being the locked truth will be a lot of fun. And updating copies opens up those challenges with concurrency, but the classic transaction models are under a lot of stress and pressure. So many core presents some of the biggest challenges we've seen as software guys to date. And our application models are under pressure. But, you know, my takeaway from that is it's a great time to be a software geek. It's just a wonderful time in the industry.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I have for this little mini lecture here.
Great. So just some quick follow-ups, Pat. For those architects who are sort of just entering the game, you know, one of the things we're really focused this year on ArcCast is to the aspiring architect. Where would you recommend, besides the Pat Helen blog, which I should definitely plug?
Well, thank you.
Where else should architects sort of begin to look to learn more about parallelism? And
I've seen a lot coming out of Berkeley. You know, mm-hmm. I just spent the earlier part of the week at a retreat for the Berkeley RAD lab. That's the Reliable Adaptive Distributed Systems Lab that's going on there. There's just, you know, when you look at the communications of the ACM, you go out and you read the literature, there's increasing attention going on in all the stuff to the changes that are happening in many core. And those are areas that I know can be looked
at. Excellent. Well, terrific. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for watching our ArcCast episode. Stay tuned for more Pat Helland on ArcCast.tv.
Along with Pat Weichel. Thank you for having me.
Very welcome.